It takes an extraordinary person to transform a personal tragedy into a vision of hope for hundreds of children. This is a Fusion View podcast, and my name is Yang Mei Ui. Dana Roski is one such extraordinary man. Out of his personal grief, he gave hope to children in Ethiopia by founding the Tesfa Foundation to provide schooling for young kids. I spoke to him when he passed through London recently. He told me about culture shock arriving in Ethiopia for the first time, coffee, and the path that led him to fulfill the dreams of the woman he loved. Hi, Dana.
Hello.
But let's just set the scene tell my listeners, who are you? You know, where are you from?
Well, I'm Dana Roski. I was born and raised in L.A., Los Angeles, in the U.S., most recently living in Minnesota, which is itself a big shift in consciousness. I grew up in the suburbs of Los Angeles and, you know, with all the amenities and disadvantages of a modern American youth, and went on to the Midwest, to the heartland, as they call it, where I spent a number of years as a teacher. Los Angeles now is the second largest Ethiopian community in America, which might make it the second largest outside of Ethiopia, because there's a lot of them, and there's quite a few in Minnesota as well.
So it's quite a contrast. You start off in L.A., which in my mind is glitzy, full of traffic, freeways, and mm-hmm. You know, Hollywood and so on, and then you go to Minnesota to be a teacher. Well, why that move?
Why that move? I'm not even really sure. For me, it was a step up, really. I didn't see the romantic side of Los Angeles, actually, when I was growing up. It was just a pretty gray, dismal suburb, as far as I could tell. Minnesota, by contrast, is a pretty nice little city. Very cold, but very modern, a lot of arts and a lot of culture there, and actually fairly multicultural these days, although 20 years ago it might have been as white could be. But
what do you teach, or what were you teaching?
I was teaching adult literacy and GED, which is high school equivalency, what we call developmental reading in college-level readers, and I did that for about 15 years.
What started you along the Ethiopian connection?
I was engaged to an Ethiopian-American woman in America. She died about 3 years ago in an auto accident, and it was really my determination to see that her dream continued on. She had always wanted, after she got her education and collected some money, to go back home and help the children in Ethiopia. So I didn't want to let that dream die.
Because she couldn't do it, you took on the role to fulfill her dream and her destiny.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah. Hopefully.
Out of this terrible tragedy, you created the Tesfa Foundation.
Yeah, right away. But, well, within 6 months after she died, I was in Ethiopia for the first time. Then 6 months after that, I had opened up a school, the first school, in a sort of backwards way. Then we went about setting up a foundation in the U.S., which, as I say, now we're setting up in the U.K. and in Europe as well.
So from really no experience, you set off to Ethiopia, which you'd never been to before.
Right.
And founded a school, and now you're looking at traveling around to, well, internationally, raising funds for a foundation that's grown.
Yeah, all accidentally, really. For example, all my European connections are just people who I met on the ground in Ethiopia who came to our school and loved it and just wanted to participate in some way. So now we've got people scattered around Europe who are kind of invested in what we're doing. Mm. Just people who liked what we were doing. The English connection is just a friend of a friend who again got fired up by the vision.
Mm-hmm. Can we talk about the sort of first 6 months? Because that to me must have been quite a culture shock for you to go and to do something amazing. I mean, you know, all the things involved in starting a school. Where do you start?
Oh, well, yeah, it was a shock arriving there the first time. It's a very different place. As far as setting up the school, I had a lot of help because I had Lisa's family and friends of friends, and had sort of a circle of people right away to help me. And, of course, the Ethiopians are very hospitable people, famous for it, I think, and very generous and humble people. And so they were fired up right away to help me. Mm. But, yeah, the first 6 months were certainly a shock to the system. It's a very different place.
And can you remember some of the things that, you know, first, like your first morning and waking up in a strange place, or perhaps the food?
Well, it's pretty, it has a big visual impact, really. It's a visual shock, I think, for a lot of people, for me anyway, just because of the sight, certainly of the poverty and whatnot, but just, you know, the colorful dress and the animals on the street and, you know, the mountains all around town. It's a beautiful place, which the Ethiopians, ironically, don't even see. It's funny. Actually, a friend of Lisa's came to visit after I had been there, and she had been in America for about 7 years, and she saw the mountains for the first time. Everywhere, from anywhere in the city, you can see the mountains around or the valley. She'd never even noticed them when she grew up there. Yeah, the food is really good. The Ethiopians, they eat everything with this flatbread called injera, which is grown, which is made from a grain that's only grown there. They're starting to grow it in the U.S. now because there's so many Ethiopians. It's called tef. Every meal they eat this injera bread with some sort of sauce, usually pretty spicy, often with beef or something in it, vegetables, chickpeas they love, lentils. It's very good food. And of course, now all over the world you can find Ethiopian restaurants. It's sort of like the new, I think maybe the new ethnic food that's catching on. It's really good. Well, as I was saying, Ethiopia can be kind of a shock to the system. For one thing, you really get a feeling for kind of being a movie star when you're on the ground in Ethiopia, because it's just nonstop attention from the minute you leave your house. You're just the object of constant attention. People want to talk to you, people staring at you, people commenting, people wanting to touch you and contact you, and it can be a lot of fun depending on how long you spend time there. Very often, foreigners in Ethiopia sort of end up hiding away, and there are a lot of foreigners there for charity purposes or diplomatic purposes, and generally they end up just hiding in their houses or in their cars or at work. And of course, I was foolish and idealistic, and I really said I wasn't going to do that. I was going to stay on the ground and on the street, which I've kind of stuck to,
and
for
so
the most part.
Do you walk around, or do you cycle, or do you ride a...
Not too many bicycles. I'd be scared to do that on the streets of Ethiopia, but because the traffic is kind of crazy, but it's also very hilly. I do the regular taxis. Most people get around on these in this taxi system where you basically go from point to point all over the city. You hail them and get in, and it's a few cents. You crowd in with the people and the sheep and whatnot, and you get carried around town. So I try to stay really with the people and on the street and whatnot, and it's probably given me a few gray hairs, but...
So not for the faint-hearted.
Another thing that's, you know, a common ploy for tourism in Ethiopia is that you lose 8 years on the journey, because Ethiopia can be a bit disorienting, because the time in almost every way is different there. The months are different, the days are different, the year is different, and the way they tell time is all different. So you end up operating on several several streams of time. Well, one thing I kind of like is that, how should I say, they mark their time by sunset and sunrise, so that 7 o'clock in the morning is 1 o'clock. So,
because it's the first hour of the day.
Right, it's the first hour of the day, or the first hour of the night. And so you always have to adjust by 6 hours in your thought.
So if I said in Ethiopia, I'll meet you at 3 o'clock.
Well, you have to specify whether you mean Farangi time or Abasha time, local time or foreign time. Yeah. So if you said, I'd have to clarify that with you. And if you said 3 o'clock Abasha time, well, that would mean 9 o'clock.
And does the sun move in Malaysia, for example? Sunrise and sunset is a set time because, or throughout the year, because it's on
right.
It's on the equator.
Right.
In the UK, in the winter.
Right, exactly.
It's different from the summer.
I think that's how that system evolves, because it is fairly steady. It's only 5 degrees off the equator, so it's fairly steady, right around 6 o'clock. And I also like seeing the stars in a different position down there.
Of course.
I'm sure you're familiar with Malaysia. But yeah, and it's also 8 years different. They're still on, the Julian calendar, I believe, whereas we updated our calendar in... what, the 14th century or so? They're still on the same system that I think all the Orthodox churches stayed on for quite a long time, Greece and Russia included. I think they only updated recently. Yeah, it's currently 1998.
To be forever in 1998.
Mm-hmm.
We'd stay young forever.
Yeah, Their new year is approaching. Their new year is September 11th, which created a lot of confusion, I think, in America. I think, actually, the Ethiopians who worked in the World Trade Center were all hauled in the day after 9/11. Because, of course, they had all taken the day off, and they seemed very suspicious to the local authorities. But it's their local, that's their new year. And so we'll be heading into 1999. Yeah, and people may want to consider a millennial trip to experience the millennium again. September 2007.
Yes.
You can re-experience the millennium and come and visit the school.
Tell me about coffee in Ethiopia.
Well, coffee is a big deal. Actually, it's kind of funny because all over the world they call coffee something that sounds like coffee, right? Coffee or cafe or whatever. And actually, the root of that word is the name of a region in Ethiopia, Kaffa, where traditionally coffee was discovered for all its wonderful effects. So yeah, coffee hails from Ethiopia.
Yeah.
However, it's the only place in the world I know that they don't call it coffee.
Of course.
Right. They call it buna.
Buna.
But it's a very central part of everyone's life. They have a ceremony. There's a coffee ceremony in Ethiopia, which they enact pretty much every day, at least once a day. And I think usually in the afternoon, and family and neighbors stop by and they do the coffee ceremony, which I think is might take as long as the Japanese tea ceremony, but isn't.
And what does the ceremony involve?
Well, it's the whole process of making the coffee from the bean on to serving it, including the roasting. It's really nice, and they have this amazing incense that they fire up while they're doing the coffee. It's called Itan.
So they actually roast the coffee when you come around in the afternoon, ready to...
Oh, yeah, from bean till drinking it. And, of course, you have to stay for all three rounds of coffee that they get from the bean.
Puts quite a different spin on, I'm just popping out for a coffee.
No, oh, yeah.
You rush into Starbucks and rush out.
That's a couple hours right there.
Sounds very civilized.
Yeah, it is. Another shock is the pace of life there once you get there. It's actually pretty nice once you adjust, but I'd say going from London to Ethiopia would be a big shock. I always feel like I'm going from, fourth gear into first when I arrive in Ethiopia.
And so you started this school. It's preschool, isn't it? It's for little kids.
Yeah. TESFA specializes in early childhood education because the government doesn't really provide any public schools for ages up to grade 7. Up to age 7. So there's no options for the poor for early childhood education. So that's our niche. We set up kindergartens, basically.
And when you set up the school, what happened? Did you sort of set up shop, have your teacher sitting at the desk and hope that some kids would come?
Well, actually, we work with the local city government. It's called a kebele. It's sort of like the district office of the city government. And we work with them, and they propose, they propose candidates, and we go out and visit with the families, make sure that there is a need, and we admit them. It's a two-year program. The kids come in for 2 years from ages 4 to 5. Yeah, and we're having our first class graduating this summer when I get back.
Excellent. And how many kids are in the school and how many teachers?
Well, our first school is called Tsigereda, which means rose. It was named by Lisa's mother because Tsigereda was Lisa's nickname when she was growing up. That's our first school. It's in kind of in the foothills of the mountains right above Addis, and we have 30 kids in this school. This fall, actually, as soon as I get back, we're opening up 3 new schools. Yeah, probably all of them outside of Addis in the countryside.
Mm. And you teach them English, math, reading?
We teach primarily in the local language. For some of these country schools, that will mean that they're learning 3 languages, basically, right off the bat, because kind of the official language of the country is Amharic, but we'll be moving into regions where they speak Oromanya. Or Oromifa, they call it, and they'll also be learning English. Right away, that's 2 alphabets, and these are kids aged 4 and 5. They're learning 2 alphabets, 3 languages, basics in math and science. Yeah.
Gosh, it's quite a lot for the young kids to be taking.
Yeah, it's a big program.
Yeah.
But in some ways, our program is better than some of the private education that the rich kids are getting, which is exciting. Because we do get volunteers in. We get Brits and Europeans who come in and help with the English program and storytelling and whatnot.
So you've got teachers, volunteers from Brits and the US, but the main bulk of the teachers are local teachers?
All the staff is local, is Ethiopian, except for me, and I'm not really staff. I just kind of oversee.
So what is your role?
I guess my role is really just setting up the program and making mm-hmm. sure that especially the expansion work, the big picture stuff is getting done.
Mm-hmm. What difference are you making? If your schools were not there, where would these children end up?
Well, the kids in my school would have been on the street for a couple more years. With any luck, they would have been in a government program at age 7. But basically, your prospects in a government program are pretty grim. You'll start at age 7. You'll have about 6 years to learn English, because in the 7th grade, all instruction in Ethiopia switches to English. And if you're not proficient in English, you just won't progress to college. Well, like in a lot of countries, your life story is kind of determined very early on. And these kids would have had no foundation, really, in education going into first grade. If they went into a government program at age 7, even then it would be classrooms with 100 kids and fairly poor teaching staff, etc. Probably not much hope of breaking out of the cycle of poverty for their family. The nice thing is these kids now, after they graduate, we will continue an after-school program in English and keep them working on English and becoming proficient in English and other subjects, which gives them a chance to go on into college. And when a kid in Ethiopia goes to college, that means basically the whole family benefits, because that kid will go on to qualify for real jobs with real money. And they turn around, invariably they turn around and they educate their nieces and nephews and cousins and their own children, and they'll house their parents and probably half the rest of the family. There's a real prospect that you're breaking a cycle of poverty in, yes. in one family at least, one extended family even.
There are 30 kids in your first school. You're actually helping more than that because of the families, parents and the other siblings.
Yeah, realistically, I mean, every kid that goes on to college, you're impacting dozens of people. Mm. So you're impacting a whole community.
So how much does it cost to put one kid through the program?
Our promise is that every school runs on a budget of $5,000, U.S. dollars.
The whole school?
Per year.
So for 30 kids, $5,000 U.S. dollars.
For the whole school. So each kid, I've broken it down because we have a sponsorship program. Each kid is about, in pounds, that's about 10 pounds a month. Those are costs that are on-site, every on-site cost, which is salaries and rent and materials and so forth. None of the charity costs, only on-site costs. It's pretty cheap to have a big impact.
And so you've been in the UK doing some fundraising, and I know you were involved in a school in Bath in mm-hmm. England where they helped to raise some money. Can you tell us something about that?
What we're doing in the UK, really, the most exciting thing, because our philosophy really as an organization is that we spread the benefits. I don't really like the idea of just collecting money at one end and spending it on the other. I want benefits to be spread around among various communities. So what we're doing in the UK is we're setting up a sister school program. We'll have 4 schools in the fall, and every one of those schools will have a UK school associated with it. And I'm developing a program where we create curriculum as we go amongst the UK schools, so that the UK children are all really benefiting from this exchange, conceptually, educationally, academically. Fundraising is sort of really my second priority. If it happens, great. If not, we go look elsewhere. It's really about spreading that benefit. It's not just about pen pals and so forth. We have pen pals, but it's more than that. These UK kids will see the schools going up from the ground in Ethiopia. So I'm really excited about that, and thinking that, you know, maybe somewhere down the line these English children will look back and say, hey, you know, education does really mean something.
Mm. So how can someone listening to this podcast help?
Well, my philosophy, again, I just want involvement. I want lots of people involved. It's really grassroots. So we're creating a sponsorship program where adults in England and the U.S. can sponsor a child in, on the ground there, and become involved with this kid's life. Everything we do for fundraising, I try to make it fun or interesting for people here in America. For example, our first big initiative in the U.K. is that we have a team of 10 Brits going down in November to run in the Great Ethiopian Run in Addis Ababa. It's the biggest road run in Africa, actually. It's a 10K, and we're making it into a fundraising deal, and it's going to be a lot of fun, because we're getting people on the ground there these Brits are going to travel and see our schools and get to know the culture and whatnot. We're kind of capitalizing on Ethiopia's reputation as a breeding ground for runners. We also have a 5K going on in America in November as well.
And if somebody wanted to volunteer to go out there and help with teaching English, they could do that?
Oh, definitely. I would love to get people on the ground there. Anybody who wants to come and help out, please contact me. We have an organization here. We have an organization in America, and we have a website for each, which lists contact information. The American organization is just tesfa.org, T-E-S-F-A, and in the UK we have tesfa-uk.org.
What is your hope for the future personally and for TESFA and Ethiopia?
I'm really ambitious that we can create a model that makes sense and that will spread very naturally, organically inside this system. My ambition is really to create a new paradigm for charity, really, where it's much more on the ground and much more grassroots, and we're affecting the most lives with the least amount of money. So I think within 10 years, it's possible to be reaching thousands of children in Ethiopia. I'd really like to see that happen. And personally, I just want Lisa to be remembered for that.
I'm sure she will be. Dana Roski, thank you very much.
Thanks.
To find out how you can help in this extraordinary project for the school children of Ethiopia, go to www.tesfa.org or www.tesfa-uk.org. You've been listening to a Fusion View podcast at www.fusionview.co.uk.